To the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody as of yet, but in a few minutes here, I'm going to throw to a conversation I just finished having with Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report, of Basketball Insiders, of the Hollywood Hoops podcast, and of Twitter, right? He's incredible on there and answering all of our questions there, and he was just as incredible in offering up his time on what is probably and almost definitely the busiest time of year for him. So you guys are really going to enjoy that. We talked about the Anthony Davis trade. We talked about the execution date. We talked about free agency and the directions that the Lakers can go in and all the options that they have. You're going to want to pay attention to that. I'm going to throw to that conversation here in a bit. And by the way, if you're looking for a place to find podcasts, check out Himalaya. Our podcast is available everywhere that you can find it, especially on Twitter, at Lakers, Locked On Lakers. You can follow me on Twitter at Anthony Irwin LA. Let's, I want to start with this thing about Kawhi Leonard from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN saying that right now it's between the Clippers and the Raptors, and he was saying that he's not even positive that the Lakers are going to get a meeting, right? I found that a little extreme. I took a couple notes away from it, and I wrote this on Silver Screen and Roll. But basically, if Adrian Wojnarowski has sources on a story, he always talks about said sources during his SportsCenter hits, his radio hits, his whatever, his tweets, right? They all indicate, you know, sources have told me X, Y, and Z. And my thing was, in listening to it a few times, and now maybe this is too galaxy brain, maybe I have my tinfoil hat on, whatever. Basically, it struck me that he never really said that. He spoke as if he had factual information, which I'm sure he does, right? I'm sure he's getting all kinds of information from all kinds of people on this front. But it was really interesting to me that he never really said, you know, according to sources from around the league, according to some league executives, whatever, that Kawhi Leonard isn't going to take a meeting with the Lakers. The other thing here, too, is and Pete and I have talked about this quite a bit on the show, but it strikes me as odd that anybody is willing to discount or just completely disregard, right, what Kawhi Leonard might wind up doing here. He doesn't speak to the media really hardly at all, right? He, throughout his entire time of leaving the San Antonio Spurs, I don't know if he ever addressed the media on that front. Since he's gone to Toronto, he's spoken a few times, but you know, that's the kind of thing you have to do when you win a title, right? And he was out in public and showed a little bit of personality there at the parade when he was surrounded by millions of fans who were all thrilled for Toronto's first title. That was cool to see. But for the most part, he's probably the most secretive. Yeah, I would probably say he's the most secretive NBA player, NBA superstar that we've really ever seen. And, you know, that anybody would claim to know one way or the other what he's thinking about doing really strikes me as odd, you know. And you know, one of the things that I kind of pride this show on is if we don't know something, we're going to tell you right from the get-go that we don't know something. And if we don't know something, if we're so far into speculation there, then we'll probably even cut it short as far as what's going on there, right? We try not to speak out of our asses. And a lot of times and I'm not saying that Woj is doing this, right? He, again, has probably all kinds of information on this front. My thing, though, is I see it throughout social media. I see it in my mentions that some are, you know, and it's just as pervasive on the side of people who think that he's coming to the Lakers as it is people who think there's no chance in hell that he's going to the Lakers, right? Both those sides are equally irrational, in my opinion. So just something to keep in mind here over the course of the next month or so, few weeks, is, hey, I don't think anybody knows anything on this front. And claiming or acting or speculating as if you do, unless you're one of the most plugged in people around the league, I don't think that's very wise, right? That's a great way to look wrong after the fact. So we'll see where this goes. It's an interesting report. I don't fully buy it. the idea of it. If the Lakers can open up salary cap, I either want to know why he didn't want to take a meeting with LeBron. And if you say, well, he just never wanted to play with LeBron, that's not true. When he initially demanded out of San Antonio, the Lakers had already employed LeBron James. Woj himself tweeted that Kawhi wanted to play with LeBron, right? And if we're going to say, well, that was just forever ago, I want to know what changed. I want to know what additional context can we provide that explains that change of direction in terms of who Kawhi would like to play with. I don't think that's too much to ask for. We might never get it, right? But if you're going to report on the situation and act as if you legitimately know and definitively know what's going to happen next, then I want that additional context, right? Because if you have all that other stuff, you should probably also have that. We're going to cut this first segment a little short. It's not too short, though. It's going to be a longer second segment. It's a nice and long third segment. You guys are really going to enjoy this conversation that we had with Eric. So I'm going to throw it to break. And then when we come back, you're going to hear from Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report, Basketball Insiders, Hollywood Hoops, and the Sports Business Classroom. And he was really good. So thanks, Eric, for hopping on. And enjoy this conversation. All right, now I am joined by Eric Pincus, one of probably the busiest people in the industry this time of year. He was nice enough to set a little bit of time for us here. He is of Bleacher Report, he is of Basketball Insiders, he is the Hollywood Hoops podcast, and then coming up in July, and you aren't going to want to miss this, he does the Sports Business Classroom out there with Larry Kuhn and everybody out there. Eric, how are you holding up?
Oh, I'm doing well. Exciting time of year.
It's a little busy, little busy, and then on top of everything else, apparently Chris Paul wants out of Houston. So as if there wasn't enough to talk about. Fortunately, the Lakers can't get involved with that because they don't have the cap space, I would imagine, right? Please.
I've been trying to think, like, is there a way they could get CP3? I haven't figured one out yet. I mean, the question isn't should. You know, sometimes I have to put aside my should hat and approach it from a salary cap perspective, because for whatever reason people expect that to, you know, me to know that stuff and explain it to them, and the numbers don't work on its face. I bet I can come up with a way, though, if I really tried hard enough. I'd have to really look hard at it.
I think I'd prefer you didn't.
Yeah, probably not.
if I was being completely honest here, we'll mess around with that stuff if we have time for it. But the reason I'm having you on is you are the smartest cap person I know. And I've been talking about this Anthony Davis trade, as has everybody, over the last few days since it came to fruition. And the reason why I'm a little hesitant to be just completely over the moon about it is this execution date stuff. So first, let's start with how you felt about the trade package that went out there, the process that went into it, how you feel about Davis coming back. And then maybe at the end there, we can get into specifics about the execution date. So how'd you see the trade go down? What do you think of the package?
Well, I've been writing on Anthony Davis and the Lakers since back in December, maybe even earlier, and it always felt inevitable to me. I thought that there would be a bidding war between the Lakers and the Celtics, but that the Celtics would probably fade from the picture because I didn't really trust that they would be a championship team this year. Mm-hmm. I thought that, as it was, that Kyrie Irving would sort of be blamed for it. And, you know, when you lose, people look at each other and they start pointing fingers. Maybe if it's the first time you lose and you're on the upside, but the second time you lose, then everyone starts blaming everybody. And only one team wins a title each year. So I thought that the Lakers were going to be in a good leverage position. And getting the number four pick, once that happened, I was like, okay, it's done in my mind. You know, of course, someone could screw it up. The Pelicans could. I knew with David Griffin in charge that they weren't going to make a deal out of spite or any sort of personal feelings, that he wouldn't have taken the job if he went to the Pelicans and they said, yeah, you can trade Anthony Davis to any team but the Lakers, mm-hmm. then he would know that they're not serious about being a great organization. They're more worried about feelings and things that are really ultimately in this picture don't really matter. I mean, not to say feelings don't matter, but when it comes to building an NBA franchise, you have to do what's right. And so I knew that the Lakers were probably going to get Anthony Davis, and I really don't know who they were bidding against. And so when I saw the deal, I thought the Lakers gave up a lot. I thought they gave up more.
I thought so too.
Yeah, more than they probably needed to. And at the same time, you have to go back to the deadline with Magic offering the entire farm, basically everything that could possibly be offered, including Solomon Hill going back to the Lakers. And it kind of killed their leverage, right? And then Rob Pelinka gets the job. And while he did a better job in the sense that Hill didn't come back, I mean, the four pick is better than what the Lakers were offering. But it's not that different of a deal than what Magic was discussing. So, you know, they pretty much it's different, but it's close enough that it's Lakers really gave up a ton. And I think that, you know, Pelinka is fighting for his job. I mean, he needs to make this great because they have LeBron. If you give LeBron nothing, maybe young players, but not a real team to compete with, that's going to go south pretty quickly. And LeBron's not a quiet guy who's just going to, you know, accept that. And so, you know, they're in danger of, or at least were, of wasting their acquisition of LeBron James, which is their crowning achievement. So I get that Rob needed to get the deal done. And to me, it looks like he did whatever he needed to get the deal done. And if you actually look at it from the perspective of, like, what did he really give up? Like, Ingram, his value at the deadline, it's actually lower now because of the blood clot. Now, yep. He may be 100% clear, but there is some risk that he gets one more blood clot. That. One more blood clot, and he could be done for the rest of his life. He may not play basketball ever again if he has another blood clot. Now, they say exactly what it was. He had surgery. It's all fixed. It's all good. But that risk exists. And then, Lonzo gets hurt a lot. We could talk about the idea of who Lonzo is and how good he was defensively and all the things that he does to the offense. And you say maybe he develops a jump shot. But the reality is that he has trouble staying on the floor, and his father's a problem. And so Josh Hart's a good player. The number four pick, I mean, you get a 19, 20-year-old kid, and maybe they're amazing, but more often than not, it takes years to develop them, and then it's a crapshoot. So you start looking big picture and say, the Lakers just paired up and salvaged the LeBron James era. So Rob, if he gave up too much, you know, so what? I mean, he did what he had to do to get a deal done. Like I said, I don't know who he was bidding against. I think that he gave more than he had to. But at the end of the day, so what? They got Anthony Davis and LeBron together. And if the margins, if they gave up 10% too much or 20% too much, so be it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I stand on the trade itself. I think the good point, the big point to make there is that it always felt like they were negotiating against themselves. So in some ways, it didn't really matter what other trades were out there on the market. David Griffin knew what he wanted to get from the Lakers. He also knew that the Lakers felt like they had to make a deal, or Rob Pelinka specifically felt like he had to make a deal. And he took advantage of that situation. That's what, you know, good executives could have done. That's what they tend to do. I want to go over just we'll really quickly before we get to the break, kind of talk about the differences between July 6th and July 30th, which we've talked about to some extent, but I'm sure you can get into better detail here. What's the main difference here between executing the trade as they want to at July 6th versus July 30th?
Well, it's a complex puzzle, and we just don't have enough information yet, right? Like, we don't have all the pieces. Mm-hmm. I think we have, like, the end pieces, but we don't really know, like, what the body of the puzzle is. And it's very possible that the names that were leaked aren't the entire picture. Now, if you were to ask Wojnarowski of ESPN or Tanya Ganguly of the LA Times or whoever else reported on it, they'll say, no, there are no other names. But that's all they know, right? They know what they've been told. But a lot of times when a trade happens or is agreed to and isn't executed yet, the people who are sharing the details, sometimes they just don't think it's important enough to mention that Isaac Bonga is in the deal. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, and future second right? rounders or and stuff like that.
Mo Wagner or something like that. So a deal can be struck on July 6th. And it could be struck in a way that the Lakers have enough cap room to go and sign Kawhi Leonard or Kyrie Irving. Now, it might be within $1 million short of that, but it's in the ballpark. And the cap could go up a little bit. I could come up with three or four different ways where it works. And even if it's a slight discount, maybe Kyrie Irving comes or whatever comes. Because if he's getting $32 million instead of $33 million, but he gets to play with LeBron and Anthony Davis, that might be reason enough, right? So it can be done, not as reported, but if they include Bonga, Mo Wagner, and Jamario Jones, then what would happen is that they would have their cap room, which let's say it's $32 million. They could spend it on a top guy. And then after on July 6th, by signing that player, they're under the cap. They use all their cap room. Now they're over the cap. Now you package all those players, including the ones I mentioned, and then you get a trade for Anthony Davis where you're over the cap. At that point, he could take his trade bonus, which is about $4.1 million. Doesn't matter. The Lakers are over the cap. Doesn't bother them. He gets extra money. It helps them if they want to give him an extension, gets it closer to a realistic extension number, whereas without the trade bonus, he's far enough away from the extension number that you say there's no reason for him to take an extension. He'll go to free agency, and it might be worthwhile if the Lakers can get him to lock it in, especially with them giving so much. Maybe that's a better way to go. So that's July 6th, and it can be done, but it can't be done as reported. And if it's not negotiated that way, and Rob says you guys got to take these, you know, to say to the Pelicans, you got to take Bonga, Wagner, and Jones as well. David Griffin can say, no, I don't want to do that. Or you can get a third team involved. Like, there's been some rumors that they're going to trade the number four pick. The Pelicans are, and let's say it goes to Atlanta, and Atlanta might be willing to take Wagner and those guys and make it a three team trade, and it could work perfectly fine. But again, if they say no, if David Griffin says no, you would like to think that Rob Pelinka pre-negotiated in the deal by giving up all those extra considerations, you know, the pick swaps, extra picks, et cetera, that he pre-negotiated and said, Dave, I'm saying this to Griffin, we're going to do the deal, but you got to work with me on the timing and the structure, and mm-hmm. It's possible we might need to include a few of these extra pieces. We won't really know until we get to July 1st or July, you know, when we see what happens with free agency and you giving us that flexibility. We're going to throw in this pick swap. We're going to throw in an extra first, et cetera. And if that's, you know, the part of the equation on Rob overpaying that I don't know about, then it is why they get three max guys together. Then I take back the assessment that Rob overpaid, because all those guys had to go anyway. And those extra pick consideration was all about making sure that it all works. So maybe he's a genius and he did exactly what I wrote about ahead of time, and kudos on him, or maybe not. And then to get to the other part of the question, Anthony, is waiting a month. And if you sign that number one pick, right, it's the fourth pick, but the first rounder, that player can be traded, and the value of their contract can be included in the trade. So when you trade a draft pick and they haven't signed a contract, their monetary value is zero, right? So they don't count as anything. They're obviously a valuable piece, but they don't go into the math equation of matching salaries for a trade. But if you sign them, the number four pick is worth $7 million, and you could trade them. And everything I said with Jamario Jones and all those guys doesn't matter, because that salary of that pick is enough to work. Right. The challenge there is that there's a 30-day wait if you sign a first rounder. And if you look at how Andrew Wiggins got to Minnesota for Kevin Love, the Cavaliers signed him, waited 30 days, and aggregated his salary in the deal, and that's how that worked. Lakers could do something very similar. Again, you get to the point where David Griffin can say, hell no, I'm not waiting a month. I want to get my guy in summer league, which is super important. We got a fan might say, oh, that's not important. No, it is important. If to a team, it's important. It's their first glimpse at the player. They get a chance to teach him how to play your style a little bit. You get to see what his strengths are, what his weaknesses are, what his work ethic is. And then, it helps you in free agency. It helps you knowing, okay, our guy isn't going to be ready for regular minutes until January, so we can't count on this rookie yet, or this guy's ready to play right now, or et cetera, et cetera. But then coupled with that is, if there is a trade with Atlanta, are they going to – now you've got two teams that are willing to wait a month, impacting three lottery – if it's two lottery picks for number four, now you've got three lottery picks that can't play summer league. It gets so complicated that it could – I mean, it's – you're restricting possibilities. You're making it so that the Hawks say, screw that. I don't want to do that deal. I don't want to have to wait.
Yeah, the Hawks weren't involved in the negotiations in the first place either.
Right. And then let's say it isn't the Hawks. Let's say it's another team. And that team is making a trade whereby they're dumping a player to the Pelicans. And the Pelicans are giving up number four. And that team that's dumping a player has to dump that player to get cap space so that they can sign a free agent. And so let's say the Lakers are like, you got to wait a month. And then the team that the Pelicans are trading that player to for that veteran can't wait a month, and it screws up their entire plan. You see how sticky it can get.
Yeah.
It's Pandora's box where it's not like, oh, Rob just should have said, wait a month. It's naive to say that, oh, he should have just done that. My belief is that he should have put the Lakers in a position to have the flexibility to go different ways. And if he didn't, why did he give up so much? Because I don't know who he was bidding up against. I agree that he should have made a deal no matter what, get a deal done. I just would hope that there's at least enough flexibility in there that the Lakers can, at least if Kawhi wants to come, or if Kyrie wants to come, or Kemba Walker wants to come, you know, this is the last chance for some time for the Lakers to really nab another top flight free agent.
Especially if they extend Davis.
Yeah, they're going to be over the cap for a long time. And, once LeBron's contract will come up eventually, but it's way down the league, way down the road. So that's kind of my take on the situation. I like the deal because it got done, or at least it will get done. I'd like to see what kind of nuances it has to enable the Lakers to do something special. And even if Kyrie says no, and even if Kemba says no, and Kawhi says no, that extra
$9 million.
$9-10 million in cap room that you could use. Like I reported yesterday just on Twitter that the market for Patrick Beverley is over $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
That could be the difference in signing Patrick Beverley or not. And whether you like him or not, he's a really good defensive point guard who, by my naked eye, I don't think he can shoot personally.
Yeah.
But the numbers
say, shoot last year.
The numbers say he's a good shooter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying irrationally, my eyes say that he is not a good shooter.
Yeah.
There's a human element here. I look at Patrick Beverley when he shoots in key moments. I don't really trust that the ball is going to go in the basket. That said, the numbers don't agree with me. So, I mean, I'm probably wrong on that front, but I'll stand by it, even if it's wrong.
Hey, you're more than welcome on here to stand on things that you might be wrong on. That's basically everything I've built for myself here.
Yeah, we are.
We're gonna take a quick second. When we come back, we're gonna keep talking about this because it's fascinating. I want to get back to the idea of negotiating some of the stuff into the deal. That's been my hang up. That's been my top hang up here. So we'll come back to that, and we'll take a trip around free agency on the back end of our time here with Eric. So that the point that you made about Rob Pelinka not potentially or hopefully in this case negotiating into the deal, okay, I am giving up this, and this. The other teams out there that were bidding, Boston wasn't willing to include Jason Tatum. Apparently the Knicks weren't willing to include Kevin Knox. Denver was interested, but they didn't want to include Malik Beasley. You can go on down the line. The Clippers didn't want to give up Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So that gets me to arrive at a point where I'm like, okay, so who exactly, what exactly was on the other end of this negotiations, right? And maybe Pelinka didn't have the autonomy to walk away from a deal if it got ridiculous. That seems to be the case here. But at the very least, he could say, okay, I'm giving you all this stuff, just at least work with me on this, right? And that's where, maybe it's a lack of trust on my part that goes too far. But do you think it makes sense as a source of, I don't know if frustration is the word, but concern is the word about the negotiations, the process? Like what exactly, other than Anthony Davis, did Pelinka walk away from value-wise in this deal? I guess if we're to find out that Griffin is not willing to work with them on the dates here.
Well, let's say that Rob says, I need all of this flexibility. You got to help me. And Griffin says, dude, there's no way that I'm going to help you get a third max.
Yeah.
And don't ask again. There's nothing that you can give me that will allow, that will open up my mind to that. I'd rather let Anthony Davis walk as a free agent. You can sign him next year. But how'd that work for you with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, right? So it's, and Pelinka needed this. And if the Lakers don't get AD, and if Kawhi stays in Toronto, and if Kyrie goes to Brooklyn, and KD's hurt, and Klay's hurt, and now it's like, okay, Jimmy Butler and LeBron, is that really like going to be LeBron's legacy in his era in LA? Are they going to be, you know, okay, the Warriors are down and maybe you win. But to me, it's like Jimmy's a really good basketball player, but he's got Thibodeau Miles on those legs. Mm-hmm. And even though he's like about 30, to me, he's like a 35-year-old. Like, I don't trust his longevity.
And you're not alone on this front either. I've had multiple people say, like, no, I wouldn't want to touch this next Jimmy Butler contract.
Right. And then I like Kemba Walker, but what if Mitch Kupchak pays him supermax or close to it? Very quickly, you get down to, like, there's just not the talent there, mm-hmm. right? Like, okay, maybe they get D'Angelo Russell, but then why did you go through all what you went through all these years, you know? I mean, look, I can argue
that. I would die laughing.
I could argue they should go after D'Angelo Russell. Like, I can make that argument right now that, mm-hmm. like, if you can't get Kawhi and if you can't get Kyrie, and some would even argue they should go after Russell over Kyrie just based on mileage. It's not like, you know, D'Angelo's got a challenging personality. He's not a bad dude. Kyrie has a challenging personality and he's not a bad dude. These are right. both guys who are very unique and different. And so, and that's a beautiful thing. In no way am I criticizing. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if Rob maximized this deal. I don't know if he panicked. I think it's reasonable to say that he made a deal out of panic, that Griffin made it sound like he was about to make a deal with, you know, the Nuggets or some team that no one ever, you know, expected. And Rob said, all right, we just got to get this done. And maybe that happened, or maybe Rob perfectly negotiated it, or maybe there was nowhere to go and it was never going to happen no matter what the Lakers offer. We just don't know.
Yeah.
And we have to operate in that, like as reporters, as you know, if you're a fan, if you're an analyst, whatever, like we never really have the full picture. We only have dots, and it's human nature to connect the dots in a way where we fill in the gaps, right? And mm-hmm. so the way we fill in the gaps are very personal and subjective. Some people, you know, are very creative. Some people like to throw fits, and you know, some people like to you know, absolutely protect the team and say, oh no, they did the right thing no matter what they do, you know, go down with the ship. Everyone has their own reaction. So we just don't really know exactly how this went, but we do know results. And so the result is that Anthony Davis is joining LeBron, and that the Lakers have some level of flexibility moving forward. If it's not full flexibility, they have enough where they have the opportunity to make good decisions. We'll see if Rob can, you know, can do proper talent evaluation and put this team together. I'd say that the way he put the team together last year at least questions what he and Magic were, what they saw out there, like the Zubats trade, and like how do they see the world through a basketball prism. Mm-hmm. And if Kurt Rambis is brought in to make those decisions, is he proven? He was not a very successful coach, but he's an NBA lifer. And you know, the way that the Tyronn Lue hiring went down, or the non-hiring went down, was suspect. But, you know, again, they didn't expect Magic to quit on them. So maybe, you know, maybe there's some bumps on the road, and maybe this is like going to be the next golden age in the Lakers. So there's a lot of, you know, there's just a lot of information we don't have, and we're not going to be able to know. But the results we'll find out, because we're right around the draft. We're less than 2 weeks away from free agency. So pretty soon, we're going to have the results when it comes down to the offseason. Then, you know, the team has to play on the court. You need to have health and all that. But it's you can judge a front office by what they do in July and say, oh, wow, they killed it, or wow, they did a terrible summer. You know, whether they win or lose, you could say that was a good summer. And so far, I think we have to say the Lakers are already off to a good summer, even if we can quibble about this, that, or the other thing.
You talked about free agency, and it sounded there are two routes that it seems the Lakers can take here. Well, it's not that it seems that they can take it, but there are two routes that the Lakers can go in. They can either add a superstar, a max guy, right, for that 32 if they're able to open that up, right? Or they can break that amount of money up across the roster. If it were up to you, if you were given, you put on your GM hat here, is there, for me, it seems like you're saying that if it's Kawhi, cool, you go and you do that, and then you figure out everything other than that. And then otherwise, it gets a little tricky from there on out. But am I reading that wrong? How would you build this roster from here on out?
Well, like, depth is important, but star power is more important. And yeah, it's just the nature of this particular sport. Every sport's different. The reason why the Warriors are so good is not because of, like, Alphonso McKinney. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's not right, because of Ian Clark from previous years, right? Yeah. Or Pat McCaw, or, you know, whatever.
If I hear any Kevon Looney slander, Eric.
Right. David West. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
like, the reality is that they were Steph, they were Clay, they were Draymond, and then Andre Iguodala. And then soon after, they were Kevin Durant and all of that. And that's why. And then you may say, oh, the Raptors won because they only have one star, but they have real depth. But yeah, they played the Warriors, who were down KD and down Clay. And they still almost, I mean, if Steph's shot goes in, that thing goes to seven.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Raptors probably pull it out, but we don't know that, you know? So, every so often you have a Raptors or a Detroit Pistons that beat the Lakers back in the day with Shaq and Kobe, right? But more often than not, it's the star power thing. So, like, and the best way to look at it, and I said it today on our Hollywood Hoops podcast, if you could, let's say you can get, like, DeAndre Jordan and, like, I don't know, Seth Curry and Patrick Beverley, or some combination of two guards, you know, J.J. Redick. I mean, even if you get Malcolm Brogdon, right? Like, pick any three players that they can fit in whatever cap room they have left. No star, but three really good players. Like, would you trade those three players for Kawhi Leonard straight up? And the answer is going to be yes, unless you don't, you know anything about basketball, right?
Yeah.
Like, everybody in the world, including, like, Malcolm Brogdon's mom, is going to trade them for that player, right? Because Kawhi is one of the best players in the league, and he's a two-way player. And you talk about, oh, well, the Lakers wouldn't have a guard, they'd have too many four. Who cares? Like, you get the best players, and you get a Derek Fisher, Fred VanVleet type point guard, and you're set. But it gets a little trickier when you start talking about Kyrie, but you probably still go with Kyrie. And it gets a little trickier when you're paying a huge contract to Kemba Walker, but you probably still go there. And you can get, like, you can get minimum guys. You can get Trevor Ariza. You can get guys who can help you win. And over time, with mid-level exceptions, when you're over the, you know, even if it's taxpayer, but probably have regular mid-level exception that first year, $10 million roughly. Let's say you go out and get one more good guy next year. You have some small trades you can make. You know, there are ways to build out a good roster built around superstars. It's doable. And people like to ring chase. And then even at the buyout deadline in March, you get guys being bought out of contracts that joined your team for the playoff run, and maybe you keep them long term. So, not worried about that. But, you know, there's a point where you could say, well, would you give $27 million to D'Angelo Russell on a 4-year deal? So, like, over $100 million. And some people would say, absolutely, do it in a heartbeat. They never should have traded him. And some would say, the ones who wanted him ridden out of town will say, you're crazy. Don't give him that money. Mm-hmm. He's not that good. Right. So it becomes subjective. And that's, there's a point where you start to say, okay, do you give all that money to Chris Middleton? Now it's easier to say, yeah, maybe you break that into three guys, even though Middleton's the best of them. And again, you know, obviously I'm not assuming every one of these players is waiting around for the Lakers to call. Some of them are going to go to other teams. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's a given, but just kind of like pointing out that, like, there's a point where you say depth is important, but star power is more important. And then the question becomes the quality of that player that you're getting. Are they worth giving up on just having depth, or are they better off just on their own? You know, and I like that Russell's young and you could build around Kuzma and AD long term. I like that to a degree Kyrie and Kemba are still youngish. You could build, they're definitely in the AD time frame. I mean, we joked about Chris Paul. If you were getting Chris Paul, which again, the numbers don't really work, you're getting someone on the LeBron timeline, and the Lakers, this is their opportunity to spend. You would like to see them get somebody that they can build around for 5 years or 8 years.
Maybe bridge that gap a little more.
Yeah, exactly.
I completely agree with everything that you said there, especially the part about the numbers not working with Chris Paul. I'm really nervous about the banana boat.
I haven't run them yet, and I know the numbers say no.
Yeah.
But I want to see if I can find some way, somehow, just to see if it's factually possible. But anyway, we'll talk about that some other day.
I'm so terrified. Again, check out Eric on Bleacher Report with Basketball Insiders, with the Hollywood Hoops podcast, with Sports Business Classroom. If you guys are interested in working in this industry, that is a phenomenal way to get your foot in the door all over the industry. So check that out as well. Eric, thank you very much for hopping on with us. I know this is a crazy busy time. And at the very least, I'll probably see you out there in Vegas.
Yes, sir. Look forward to it.